Welcome back to Alive at 5. I'm your host, David Leonard, and it's my pleasure to welcome the program here this afternoon, Barbara Plasker. Barbara is the author of a book entitled Simple Ways to Transform Your Life, Lessons Learned by a Late Bloomer. And I wanted her to come on the program and talk about her book and talk about how it is that even though you may be getting up in years, you still have the opportunities to do something about your life. If you're not particularly happy about where you're at, if you have other places that you want to go, perhaps professionally, perhaps personally, you can do that. And Barbara's going to talk to us about that here today. Barbara, thank you so much for making some time for me.
Thank you, David, for having me. It's a pleasure.
Here at the beginning, for a listener out there that may not be familiar with you, if you'd be so kind, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Barbara Plasker?
Sure. I'm a 77-year-old woman who has had who started her life when she was... No, that's not true. I shouldn't say that. I started my journey of personal growth when I was 35 years old. And between the ages of 20 and 30 years old, I had a difficult time. I had a wonderful time and a difficult time because I had I was married at 20 and I had three boys by the time I was 30, and that was wonderful. I moved from the city to the suburbs. That was wonderful. But when I was pregnant with my third child, my mother passed away, and 2 years later, my father passed away. And during that time period, those 10 years, I lost three grandparents, my father-in-law, and two uncles. And I didn't realize the impact that all of those deaths had on me. And when between the ages of 30 and 35, I was a lost soul. I was kind of numb. I was in grief. And I didn't even know that I was grieving. And I wanted more for my life than what I had. And my kids were getting older. And I knew I needed to do something and to change that dark place. And the first thing I did was I studied transcendental meditation. I learned to meditate because I wanted to learn to relax. And to without relaxing, I don't think I could have gotten in touch with myself, which was an important thing. I also made a promise to myself that I would make personal growth a priority in my life. And so I started pursuing classes and studied and took programs, different programs. And one of the programs I took, the facilitator asked us to draw a self-portrait. And I really didn't know who I was at that point in time. I ended up putting a dot on the piece of paper. And I thought that dot was a piece of nothing, because that's how I felt. And there was a foot. I put a foot over that dot, as though I was going to get stepped on. Now, fast forward to later years, I realized that that dot was not a piece of dirt. It was a seed. You know how tiny seeds are sometimes? They're really tiny. You can barely see them if they're on the ground. But I nurtured that seed, and I grew, and I grew. And when I became a life coach, I named my business, It's Never Too Late to Bloom. And that's a kind of, David, what you're picking up on and telling your audience about. It is never too late to bloom. So I was 35. At 40, by the time I was 40, I got my master's degree in industrial design. I was fulfilling a childhood dream when I got that degree. And when I was 56, I got my doctorate in adult education. And when I was 64, I was laid off from my job, and I found another job and worked until I was 75. My career has been really interesting. I'm an educator. I've been a training specialist. I've worked with all kinds of people from, I've taught college professors who were doctors before I got my doctorate. And I also taught homeless adults who were in a shelter, and my job was to bring them into education. And so I've had a really interesting life. When I was 35 years old, I never foresaw any of that.
I wanted to ask you today here, Barbara, about one of the things you've written about, including, and it's actually part of the title of your book, the phrase late bloomer. Mm-hmm. And you talk in your book about how you love late bloomers. But I wanted to ask you so that we're all on the same page here. When you talk about someone being a late bloomer, what is it you're referring to?
I'm talking about people who have been on a steady journey of making a living and living their lives and raising their kids. But they have a yearning for something more in their lives. They want to make a difference. And many people who are in that state of mind say, "I'm too old. I can't do that." But there are so many people who have changed their lives at any age. I'm thinking about who's that cookbook author? Can't think of her name. She was a TV star before.
Julia Child.
Julia Child, right. She didn't start until she was an older person. Gloria Steinem got married for the first time when she was 66 years old. There was a football player, Lawrence, I can't think of his name, who while he was playing football, his mother always wanted him to get a degree, and he was a football player, a professional football player. But every summer he would take 6 credits every summer, and by the time he finished playing football, he had his degree. I worked for a university in their adult enrollment office, and I saw people coming back to school at an older age. There was one man who was a police officer who was about to retire, and he had the presence of mind to go back to school and became a social worker. That was his dream. So I've seen so many people change their lives because they wanted to make a difference. They wanted to feel fulfilled, and they overcame their fear, because there's always fear attached to making changes like that.
Well, I would agree with you. That can be a very frightening process for a person. You know, one of the things that's occurred to me, Barbara, as I listen with you here today, one of the things I hear you talking about is how your journey really started after a series of losses that you'd experienced, a series of deaths in your family.
Right.
And do you find that quite often, that's what it takes for somebody to begin on a path like this, is they need that sort of catalyst to get them going?
Yeah, that's a great observation. I'm just thinking about somebody I know who was very unhappy in their marriage, and when they ended their marriage, they asked for a divorce after their mother died, because they didn't want their mother to, his divorce to affect his mother.
Well, and certainly, you know, I mean, I can think about instances in my own life where after a serious event like that, like the death of a loved one, say the death of a parent, you look at your life differently. I mean, it does change your perspective, and your values change, and the maybe the places you want to go change. I mean, this can really be an important first step for someone. One of the things that you've written about is that you wrote, "What if you have the courage to live your life true to yourself instead of the life others expect of you?"
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That really is so important to an individual, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, you know, we're invested in an idea, because when we have that idea that comes from somebody important to us, and they love us because we have that idea. And so I was reading a book called Brain Drain the other day, and the premise of the book is we have an automatic brain that we're programmed throughout our lives to respond to certain things in a certain way. And the example he gave was a person who didn't want to worry anymore. But because her mother told her that you're not a good parent unless you worry, she decided to worry, not consciously decided, but she became a worrier because her mother would approve of that. And when her mother passed away, she said, "I don't want to worry anymore." And you don't have to worry. I do have it, I believe I have it in the book about, yeah, I do, in the chapter called White Light. We don't have to worry, because worry is a waste of time and a waste of energy, and it's non-productive. And we can change our thoughts when we're worrying. If we become conscious of them, I think that's very important. We need to become conscious of our automatic brain, or sometimes I call it the puppeteer. I feel like I want to do something. I say, let's say I'm a gambler. I don't want to gamble anymore, but I'm addicted to gambling. And so I say in the morning, I'm not going to make a bet today. And then you go and you make a bet. Well, who's making the decision there? Or it's the same with eating. I'm not going to overeat today, or I'm not going to have sweets today. And then you find yourself in a bag of sweets. Well, there's two opposing forces there working on you, and the automatic brain, or the one that says, you know, when I was a kid, when I was feeling unheard or unseen, my mother always gave me a cookie. So you learn that cookies are going to make you feel better. And so that automatic brain has made the decision, if I want to feel better, I have to eat a cookie or two or three or a box.
You know, Barbara, as you're talking about someone who worries for whatever reason, I found that to be personally very interesting, because I'm going to share a story with you out of my life. Many years ago now, I was seeing a counselor, and as we were talking one afternoon, Bob and I were talking, and I don't even remember the context of the conversation now, but he said to me, he stopped and he said, David, I want to ask you something. He says, are you a worrier? And I said, well, gosh, I don't know. I never thought about that. Could I be? He says, I think you should spend some time considering that. He says, I think you really should. And so it happened to be that this was on a day that I had the day off. And I went home, and later on that day, I fixed some supper, and I was sitting there on the couch later on that night, watching some TV with the remote control in my hand, and it dawned on me that what I was actually doing while I was sitting there was I was worrying about whether or not I was a worrier, which tells me that, yes, you are a worrier, and you have some issues with that. Quite often, these things, though, it really does take the mirror of another person pointing this out, especially if it's somebody that you know and you trust, to really get that idea across to a person, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does. And, you know, I have a four or five step process in the book called The Guidelines for Transformation. And it teaches you how to, without having another person reflect back on you what they see. And even when somebody reflects back on you what they see, you don't believe them unless something dramatic happens, like a death of a parent, or in my husband's case, he was a smoker. And everybody told him he shouldn't smoke, but he couldn't stop smoking. And one day he had a heart attack. And he was in the doctor's office, and the doctor decided to drive him to the hospital. And he lit up a cigarette, my husband. And the doctor said to him, if you don't throw that out the window, he says, I'm not going to take you to the hospital. And that's when he stopped smoking, when something happened that said, look, buddy, if you don't change your ways, you're going to be very sorry.
I'm visiting this afternoon with Barbara Plasker. Barbara is the author of a book entitled Simple Ways to Transform Your Life, Lessons Learned by a Late Bloomer. One of the things that you wrote about, and I found this to be really interesting because I think it makes a great point about ourselves and our personal strengths and how sometimes what we consider to be a personal strength can really get in our way. And so I'm going to share that with you, Barbara. You wrote about, do you deny or ignore warnings that are threatening to your well-being? Mm-hmm. And then you wrote about your journey to accepting the fact that you have a problem with blood sugar. Tell us about this. How did this all come about?
I'm the kind of a person that follows up on health. I'm very careful about my health. I know what I need to do. I need to prevent things. I'm not the person that says, oh, no, I'm not going to look at this because I don't want to see it. I was going to an endocrinologist who took my blood sugar, and she warned me over a period of time, and I wouldn't accept that the first time she told me, you know, if you don't do something about eating sugar, you could become diabetic and you need to cut back on your carbohydrates. And I said, she showed me the results of the test. And I said, it can't be. It must be a mistake. And 2 years later, she told me the same thing after doing the same test. And then I started to monitor my blood sugar. And I was fine because I was watching my carbs and watching my sugar. And I decided one day that I was going to go and have one of my high-carb lunches. And when I got home and 2 hours later, I took my blood sugar and I could see how high my blood sugar went. From pricking my finger, and that was what convinced me. But it was 6 years before I could accept that this was a problem for me.
And one of the points that I wanted to get to with you on this is the fact that while being a strong-willed individual, generally I think most people would say that is a positive asset. That is a good thing when you're strong-willed. But in this case, that strong will was actually to your detriment, wasn't it?
Yes, you know, and when I write in that chapter that I'll go around, you know, if I can't get what I want, I will go around it or through it or over it. I'm going to get what I want. That's the kind of person I want to. My belief system is cast in gold, and unless something happens to knock me off my center, I will just keep on trying to get over something that I know I need to change. The same thing with my husband. When I told you the story about my husband, stop smoking, no, have a heart attack, have the doctor say throw out the cigarettes or I'm not going to go to the hospital with you. Sometimes we need that kind of wake-up call, unfortunately, because sometimes it's too late.
Oh, Barb.
I don't know if you have time for this. A story, one of my sons, somebody who worked in his office for 17 years, just passed away yesterday. And he had been to the doctor maybe 4 years before and was diagnosed with a very serious lung disease. He did not change his lifestyle, which was recommended to him. He did not tell his parents. He did not tell his wife or his children or any of his relatives. He did not tell my son. And he passed away from this lung disease that he never... It's like, what do they call it? Denial. That's what it's called, denial. I don't have this. I don't have to deal with it. But it's not true. We need to take care of ourselves.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment, Barbara. If an individual has had the wake-up call, as you put it, however that came to them, from whatever source that came to them, if they've had that wake-up call, what are some of the first steps that they need to undertake to begin to move forward in their lives and to move to a place where they're going to be much happier than they are right now?
I believe it's a matter of living your life more consciously and learning to pay attention to the things that people tell you, like a doctor, or feelings that you're having that don't resonate with who you are, but you act on them anyway. You need to start observing what your mind is telling you. Like I said before, you have two minds. You have your automatic brain, and then you have a part of you that wants something consciously, but there's that other part of you that denies you the opportunity to reach that. I have a slide presentation where I show somebody crossing a finish line, somebody who's achieved something they really want in their lives. And if you have a vision of that, the first thing that might happen to you, and it happened to me, is a wall comes down. It's like it drops in front of the picture of the vision. And you have all these reasons why that you can't have that. So in my case, it was I didn't have the confidence. I was afraid. I didn't know how to do what I wanted to do. Like writing this book, I didn't know how. And so it stopped me from doing it. And I finally realized that I needed support. And I enrolled in a coaching program that helped me get through this book. And I'm so pleased that I did. But there are so many dreams and visions that people have that stop them. I have a friend who was a business partner of mine, and we went out to lunch one day, and she took out a piece of paper from her bag, and she started to cry. And I said to her, what's wrong? And she said, I want to go back to school. I want to go get my degree, my associate's degree, but I can't even fill out this application. And the application said, yes, for her name. She couldn't even write her name in the box that said name. And I said, why is this so traumatic for you? Excuse me. And she said, when I was a kid, we moved every year, and I had to start in a new school. And I was always an outsider, and I never fit in. And that's what this application brought up for her in her memory. And she was afraid to go through with it, even to fill out the paper. So I worked with her. We filled out the whole thing. She submitted it. She was accepted. And she got her associate's degree and went on for her bachelor's degree. But that childhood memory was what stopped her.
Well, and certainly, I think now we're back to discussing how the automatic thinking that we do quite often, even though at one time it may have been to our benefit, quite often years later it is no longer beneficial to us. In fact, gets in our way. Excuse me. And one of the things, like you were talking about, when we were talking about earlier about worrying, and after I had the experience of actually figuring out I was a worrier, well, I went about the business of trying to assess that situation. Why is that? And one of the things I did was I became very conscious of what I was thinking and trying to figure out why I was thinking that and why I was feeling that.
Yeah.
And as that process became more habitual, I guess, as I kept working with that, it got to be easier and easier. Mm-hmm. And I found the need for worry eventually went away. And now I can tell you that at this point in my life, I have concerns, but I certainly do not worry about things the way that I did back in those days. To an extent, Barbara, isn't some of this, what you're talking about here today, aren't some of these things that people need to do? It does get better with practice, and it does become easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, you have to make a decision that you don't want to live the way you're living now, and you want a different life. Whether it's in your career, in your job, in your relationships, it calls for a decision that you want something more. And that if you've got that, if you've made that decision, then there are steps you can take. You can start like you did. You started to observe your mind. That's my first step in the Guidelines for Transformation, is you start to observe your thinking, and you became aware, you become aware of the thoughts that are holding you back. You know, I told the story recently. When I got my master's degree, my husband would say to me, Barbara, when are you going to get a job already? And I would just have a panic attack every time he asked me that question. But I was working on myself at the time, and I finally was able to go to a temp agency. I took a typing test, I passed, and they sent me out to the corporate world. I was terrified of going out there. And when I got there, I said, what the heck were you afraid of? I made up these stories in my mind that I didn't belong there, I wouldn't fit in, or I couldn't manage there. But I managed fine. But it's the stories we make up in our heads that we have to pay attention to. We have to become aware of and say, is this true? Do I really need to believe this? But it's really hard if you're not working on yourself, to break through those thoughts, because they really are very powerful.
In the time that we have left here today, Barbara, there is one more thing I wanted to ask you about, because I think it is very important that people be aware of this as well. One of the things that you write about is the need for acceptance in our lives, because there are simply going to be some situations that we will not be able to change. That is a fact of life. And so acceptance can open some doors for a person that I think otherwise would remain closed. But I wanted to hear from you. When you use the phrase, the word acceptance, Barbara, what are you referring to, and what does this mean for you?
Acceptance means that things are the way they are, and I can't change them. And so, because I've tried, you know, it's like I've always tried to change things that I couldn't change. So I'd love the serenity prayer. Grant me the acceptance to accept. The serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That last part, the wisdom to know the difference. Well, I get stuck in the courage to change something that can't be changed, and that's where I get stuck. But if I can get to the place where I can accept this is something that I have no power over, I am powerless over this. To me, it's like, okay, it is what it is. And to me, it's like opening a door marked acceptance is the way to freedom. And if I open that door, I am free to make choices for my own good. If I get to the other side of that door and say, okay, now I know this is real. Now I know that I can't do anything about this. So now what are my choices? I think that's an important part. So my process is observation. Get to know yourself. Become aware in the moment of what you're doing or what's happening. Accept that situation. And once you accept it, you have choices and you can change. But a lot of, like, if somebody had said to you, well, you're worried, you said to yourself, I'm a worrier. I accept that I worry. Now what can I do about it? And then you were able to make some decisions that stopped you from worrying.
Barbara, it's been a great conversation with you here today. If we have a listener out there that would like to be able to get a copy of your book or take a look at your website to learn more about your work, how can they go about doing that?
Sure. The book is available on Amazon. You can go to Amazon and put in my name, which is Barbara Plasker, P-L-A-S as in Sam, K-E-R, and the book will come up. My website is www.barbaraplasker.com, and you can read more about my work as a life coach and my life's journey, and you can take a look at the book. The book is also mentioned on my website.
Very good. I want
and
to
if
take.
If anybody wants to reach out to me, you can find me at info@barbaraplasker.com.
Very good.
You can also text me the words "my journey" at 42828, and I'll respond to you.
Very good. I want to take a moment now to thank you for spending some time with us here today. We've appreciated hearing from you.
Thank you very much for having us. I enjoyed our conversation very much, David.
That's Barbara Plasker joining me here this afternoon on Alive at 5. Her book, Simple Ways to Transform Your Life, Lessons Learned by a Late Bloomer. Keep it tuned right here to Yankton's home team, AM 1450 KYNT. We'll be right back after this.